This week on Midwest Week, whatever became of Michael Nunn? I'm Herb Trix, and my guest this week is Don Doxey, sports editor for the Quad City Times. So, Don, remind us to begin with, before he went to prison, who was Michael Nunn?
Well, Michael is a young man who grew up in Davenport and became one of the best middleweight boxers in the world in the 1980s and 90s, was a two-time world champion in the middleweight division, and a lot of people feel was as good as any boxer in any division as far as pure boxing and everything else. So just one of the real stars of his sport.
So what made him such a good boxer? Is it just a gift that some people have, or was he trained by the right people, or what?
Well, he certainly got good training growing up from Alvino Pena, who of course has had, the late Alvino Pena, who had so many kids come up through the ranks in Davenport. But Michael was just incredibly fast and elusive, was almost impossible for anybody to really get a good shot at and hit. And he just a really gifted young man and boxed with an immense amount of confidence. Not unlike, Muhammad Ali, sort of that mold. There have been a lot of those boxers like that.
That's what I was thinking of, reading your story and knowing him a little bit way back then.
Yeah, I mean, he certainly had tremendous confidence but was very gifted physically, too.
So what went wrong?
Well, throughout his life, Michael had all sorts of scrapes with domestic incidents and brushes with the law and all. I mean, I can't verify this statistic, but I've seen somewhere that he was arrested 28 times.
Okay.
None of those were really drug related, but as his career kind of waned, he apparently did allegedly anyway sell drugs and was finally caught doing it.
And what do other boxers do when their career is done? I mean, where did he choose something different from other boxers, or did he sort of do the same thing?
That's a really, really hard question. I mean, there's a lot of boxers who have a hard time retiring. There's some of them box into their 50s. I don't know. I think Michael sometimes, as a lot of people do, fell in with the wrong crowd and maybe hung around with the wrong kind of people. And I don't know. I don't know if he had financial problems. I think there was some of that. I think some of the people who managed him didn't give him his fair share of the money. I won't mention any names, but he was involved with Don King for periods of his career.
But we won't mention any names.
No. So I think there was some of that, and maybe he had some money problems, too, that led him to do some things with drugs. I don't really know. I don't have a firm answer for that.
So how long was his sentence, and what are his chances of maybe getting out anytime soon?
He was sentenced to 292 months, which if you do the math is 24 years and 4 months. Mm-hmm. And at that time, there was in the federal prison system, there's no opportunity for parole. Now, as time has gone on and the prisons have filled up, they've reduced things. He right now has a date of 2019 when he's supposed to get out, but they're beginning to release a lot of nonviolent criminals, mostly drug-related, very early. They've released 6,000 of them nationwide in the month of November.
Okay.
As of November 1st, those 6,000 got out. So I think Michael is hopeful that he can get out even earlier than 2019.
So his conviction was for a nonviolent crime, basically selling, what was it, cocaine or something like that?
Yeah, it was, I believe, only 1 kilogram of cocaine is what the actual, although there were conspiracy charges. It's a pretty complicated case. But
do our feelings about drugs, have they changed a bit in 20 years? I mean, you say just a kilogram, and 20 years ago, was a lot.
I guess I'm quoting his friend Eric Murphy when I say that, because that was his direct quote. I don't know. I have a feeling that maybe they have changed a little bit. And somebody who just sells drugs isn't viewed as quite as heinous a person as someone who kills somebody or rapes somebody, and which I guess makes sense. But yeah, I think maybe attitudes have changed a little bit.
Okay, now you knew Michael Nunn in his days in the ring, and you've talked to him recently, at least sort of indirectly. How has he changed?
He claims to have changed a great deal. He's adopted a Muslim way of life. He's a vegetarian. He says he has stayed in tremendous shape. I haven't seen him in person. My interview with him was done by email through a friend of his, Eric Murphy, who was his press agent back in the 90s. But he claims to be a changed person and much more calm and easier to get along with and everything else. And you know, I have no way of knowing exactly how accurate that is, but that certainly is what he claims.
Well, we could certainly agree that prison may have changed him somehow.
Well, I would think, yeah. I mean, he has been in prison now for, 12 or 13 years. Yeah. I would think that would have changed him.
Now, your article mentioned he's had some trouble in federal prison. What sort of trouble has he had?
Well, he claims to have been persecuted and actually physically abused in a few cases. Because people know who he is, because he's a famous person in prison, he feels like he has been mistreated in a few cases. One of his claims is that they took his phone away. That one kind of stunned me. I didn't realize you could have a phone in prison. But
maybe medium or minimum security or something?
Yeah,
I don't know.
And he is claiming that because of that, as you go through the prison system, you graduate to a more minimum level of security, and they feel that they're holding him back from that. But and he's been transferred. He's been in seven different federal prisons.
Yeah, I was kind of amazed that he's been transferred all those times.
Yeah, he is now at Hazleton Federal Correctional Institute in Brewston Mills, West Virginia, and he's been there since May. But the abuse he claims took place down in Texas.
So let's say Michael Nunn gets out of prison sometime soon. What does he want to do? What does he say he might do if he gets out?
Well, the first thing he says, he wants to come back to the Quad Cities and reconnect with family. And he's got a lot of family. He's got a lot of kids that he's accumulated through the years. And I guess he threw out the word grandchildren. So apparently he has some grandchildren too. But he wants to come back here. He hinted that he may still be interested in boxing. He's 52 years old. Bernard Hopkins, who was one of his contemporaries, is older than that and is still out there competing. So if he has, in fact, stayed in shape, he may take another shot at boxing.
Okay. So remind us, Don, one of the things that I have a vague memory of that you mentioned in your story was the rumble on the river. When was that and what was it?
That was in May of 1991, and it was a world championship fight at what was then John O'Donnell Stadium in Davenport. Just probably the most memorable thing I think I've ever covered. 12,000 people in a outdoor baseball stadium watching a world championship fight. People were lined up on the Centennial Bridge nearby to watch it from there because they didn't want to pay the money to get in. But and, of course, Nunn was the defending world middleweight champion and lost to James Toney, had his title taken away that night. But just maybe the most amazing sporting event I've seen in 30 years in the Quad Cities.
Now, was that one of his last bouts, or did he go on and regain the championship?
No, he went on and regained actually the world super middleweight championship after that and had five more title defenses on that. So he was still a very good boxer into the late 90s and even up until the time when he was arrested in, I believe, 2002 on the drug charges. But, he still remained a very good fighter and, like I say, did regain a world championship after that.